And welcome to another episode of the Dynasty Trades HQ podcast, brought to you by the Dynasty Football Network and DynastyFootballFactory.com. My name is Michael Sipes. You can find me on Twitter at FFBlitz. And I'm here with my partner, Shane Manila.
Hi.
You can find at DFF underscore Shane. And Jeremy's on vacation with his family this week, so he's not here.
Thank God.
So without Jeremy here, we brought in our guest, Jordan McNamara. How you doing, Jordan?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You can find Jordan on Twitter at McNamara Dynasty. And he's also the podcast co-host at UTHDynasty.com, correct?
Under the Helmet.
Yep.
And
you've heard of Under the Helmet.
Of course I heard of it, but I'm reading his bio the way you wrote it, which actually, there's another part to it here. It says that he's also the author of the book, The Analytics of Dynasty.
Well, that's correct. Technically, he is in the process of becoming the author, I think.
No,
until it's published. He's not really an author, right?
But he's the author of that book, whether it's published or not. He's writing it. Shut up, Shane.
There's a table of contents, so it does exist.
He's also a league mate of Shane's in two leagues.
Including one of them. Yeah, one of them. He's actually in the podcast league that we're in that I don't let you guys do anything with. He's pretty much doing the same thing for Under the Helmet, where I think he joined on his own and was like, yeah, well, whatever, you guys. I'm pretty sure that's what he did.
Yeah, Jordan, that is what Shane did. He joined that. He says he's a representative for us, but he didn't tell Jeremy and I anything about it.
Yeah, I was the designated guy for UTH. So I represent us there. I don't know what your guys' inner dynamics on the representation is, but I'm pretty firmly on solid grounds representing UTH, I think.
So real quick, though. Yeah. So Jordan, I'm sure most of our listeners listen to the same podcast that Jordan's been on lately because he's been promoting the book, and I'm stoked and can't wait for it to come out. It sounds like it's going to be really good, and we're going to dig into that a little bit later. And that's really cool, man. I don't even know what drove you to do that, to say, you know what, I want to write a book about fantasy.
So, it started as a DFS research project. So in 2017, I was playing some DFS, and I just didn't feel like I had a good enough grasp in terms of like historical probabilities and that sort of thing. So I decided to do a whole bunch of research in January and February into DFS. And as I was doing the research, what I came to realize is there was like a ton of dynasty stuff in there that I thought was really unique and contrarian. And so I kept looking at it, and I basically, not intending to write a book or anything, I just, you know, I'm a writer at Fantasy Pros and at UTH. And so I just sat down and just started writing my thoughts just based on all the data that I put together. It's basically a 10-year study of the dynasty marketplace in terms of production, market value, all those sorts of things. And I just started writing, and I got about a couple weeks in, and it was like 45 or 50 pages long. And I said, wow, I said, this is actually a real possible thing. And so I started reaching out to some people that I'm friends with and some people that follow me on Twitter and just through UTH. And I said, you know, is this something that you guys are in the market for? Because there isn't another really any recent dynasty books, you know, full on strategy dives that I found. And so so they were like, yeah, do it. And so I just started writing. And right now I think I'm about 115, 120 pages in. It studies a lot of dynasty startup strategy. It'll be released in, It'll be released in January after the conclusion of the 2018 season, just in time for 2019 startups. It goes through a lot of startup strategy, a lot of rookie draft strategy, just a lot of ways to get edges on your opponents that I think that are different than some of the strategy and common wisdom that's out there. And plus, so you can pre-order now. And if you pre-order now, one of the things you're going to get is for $25, you get a copy of the book, and you also get a one-on-one strategy session. So pre-order before September 1st, about a week or so left. Pre-order before September 1st, we'll get together, do a one-on-one strategy session, talk, you know, if you got a late startup or if you want to, we'll starting to do them in season for in-season trading and stuff like that. There's a lot of data on that that I think is helpful. We'll get together, do a strategy session, give you some of the tips and give you some edges on your opponents. And you can do that at analyticsofdynasty.com. There's some content up there. Just, it's just a preview of the book. And then you can pre-order there for $25 and we'll get together, do a strategy session.
That's pretty cool. It's funny when you say, you know, there's not any new published stuff out there. There's a lot of stuff that's not published for Dynasty people. I mean, there's still people out there that are all playing regular fantasy. And when you mention Dynasty, a lot of times people are like, I don't even know what that is. You know, so how are you going to get this out there to everybody? What is, you're saying that it'll be out. Is it only going to be an ebook, or is it going to also be something that people could get at like Barnes and Noble?
No, it's just going to be an ebook. It's going to be, what I'll do is I'll release it. You know, all the people that order it, I'll ultimately send it to you in an email form. And it'll be a PDF email form that you'll get. And you'll get it probably later part of January, 2019. So it's really targeted at Dynasty. Although I think, like, if you're a Dynasty player, I think there's a lot of stuff to draw from it for, you know, it's a targeted at a Dynasty trade, a Dynasty strategy for trades and that sort of thing, and startup drafts and rookie drafts. But I think there's a lot of, like, broad strategy conclusions and a lot of things about fantasy football in general that you can draw from it. So you can use the data and the strategy and some of the findings in it for DFS and for regular fantasy, but it is primarily intended to a Dynasty audience.
That's great.
See, I do like that, you know, you can use it towards DFS type stuff, because I do think in Dynasty, a lot of times we take the long view and almost forget that we need to win on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when we're building our rosters, we don't think week to week. We do think like, wow, this is the best looking roster overall. And then you forget to win at the margins. You forget, you know, there's going to be injuries. So even though, no, I'm not a big fan of them, but a guy like Chris Carson last year, say you knew going into, you know, coming out of preseason, like he might not be the lead back, but at some point he's probably going to be a starter 1 or 2 weeks. And those 1 or 2 weeks, it's going to be pretty big to have him. Looking at the table of contents that Jordan shared with us, I actually do already have a favorite, oh, here it is. Yes. Under strategies, being less wrong.
So what is that? Is that a chapter or what are you going to talk about being less wrong?
So being less wrong, one of the things that I find is that, like, I think that we're way overconfident in terms of what's going to happen. and I really like, and one of the things that, like, I found surprising, if you were to draft 2 startup running backs in the first round of a startup draft, I think that by and large, people would expect them to produce top 12 seasons. You know, if you select one of them, I think like you're shooting for that. Like that's sort of what you expect by drafting them there. If you were to somehow trade up and get a second one, that sort of strategy is targeted at, I think they're both going to finish in the top 12. Well, the historical rate of that happening is actually quite low. It's the historical rate of 2 running backs drafted in the first round of a startup draft finishing as top 12 finish throughout year one is only 34%. And so, like, and that's where we spend all our energy, right? We talk about the early parts of startups, right? We're debating Le'Veon Bell and Zeke and David Johnson and Barkley. And, you know, that's really what we're thinking about. And there's a high risk of a lot of things happening to those guys. And there's a really high chance that they're not going to finish where we expect them to finish. And I think if you sort of come at it with the perspective of, hey, there's a really good chance that I'm going to be wrong, it really can shape how you go about drafting, how you go about trading, how you go about doing all of those things, and really building a team that's built to win sort of over the long term and built with good stability.
Yeah, the other thing that people do when they try to trade up into the first round, they usually trade away their future picks to do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely trade away for future picks, and actually the pick that the league that Shane and I are in together, I actually that's where that stat came from, because I had the third pick in the draft, and I traded down. And the person, I forget the order in which he did it, but I think he took Gurley and Zeke. And I traded down and got a second, a third, and a future first. And sort of as I looked at that, like the odds of him hitting there aren't great with those two picks. And like it really opened up my odds to really executing my strategy, which is to get a lot of players of that have a high historical likelihood of hitting and sort of stacking them together and building sort of a long-term plan. So that's one of the things that I really found. You know, I think too, like we talk about like improving our hit rate and how do we hit more on picks. One of the ways is just to eliminate the bad. Like sometimes it's just taking out the players that we have a really good feeling aren't going to hit. So for instance, like in rookie drafts, like so much conversation is spent on who's the next Dak Prescott. Like there's been in the past 10 years, there's been two guys that have hit from outside and that have hit from day three as top 12 quarterbacks. Like, and if you're playing Superflex and 2QB, like if you're loading up on a lot of the Kyle Lauletta types, hoping that they're going to develop, like the odds of them hitting are really, really remote. And so like just by focusing and narrowing out, the same thing with day three tight ends and the same thing with day, you know, really any receiver drafted outside the top two rounds of the NFL draft, like the hit rates on those guys are so low. And if you can sort of limit the amount of people that you take in that range, it's just going to naturally boost up your hit rate and you're going to be less, you're going to, you know, you're reducing your miss rate. And in that you're increasing your hit rate.
It is true too. I mean, we've talked about it a lot on this show and I'm sure you have over at UTH about how, especially over the last couple of years, everybody expects that their rookies that they get this year are going to be their guys and they're all going to work and everything's going to be great. And I know with this year with Saquon Barkley being 1.01, but then there's been so much talk about everybody else in the first round. It's all over the place. So when you make some of those trades, like you say, you know, you're mortgaging whether you're going to do something in the future. I know even on Twitter, you had a comment today about James Washington, and it just kind of went crazy all over Twitter about what you said.
Yeah, you would have thought that I, like, insulted James Washington's mother when I made the comment. And literally what I said is, love James Washington's game, meaning, like, how he plays football generally. But keep last night in perspective, and this is the, you know, he had the big preseason game. We knew that was what his game is, right? He's a guy that's elite in making big-time catches down the field. He was an average to slightly above average speed deep threat with difference-making ball skills. Demonstrating that is confirmation, not a reason to double count, right? You don't want to, like, vault him up because, oh, look, he made this great play. Like, we knew that's how he's going to win in the NFL if he's going to be successful. Like, we knew that's who he was. You would have thought that I, like, hated the guy. Like, I was surprised that there were some folks out there that thought that I just hated James Washington, which couldn't be further from the truth. Like, he's my locked in. Like, he was in Penn at 201 for me in rookie drafts this year. So he was not someone that I was low on. I was actually quite high on him compared to the market.
I like that randomly out of nowhere, people just start asking you if other players are better.
Yeah,
like it's not like you said it in any way. And just looking at your tweet, you know, the most offensive thing I found about it,
what's that?
Is the triple space between the periods.
Oh God.
Because what you said isn't, it's not like you said anything bad about him, but yeah, that is exactly what we thought he was. And for some reason, people were not happy with this. But there was another guy that just decided to ask you about running backs. So I like that comment, too, because that's fun.
Yeah.
At least they care, I guess, right?
Yeah. They're just like, I don't care about this conversation, but.
He starts talking about Kerryon Johnson and Royce Freeman. I do like anybody.
But Jordan, let me ask you this. Yeah. Can you show anyone film of him being caught from behind?
That's the weird part is I didn't say that. Like there was some folks out there who must have followed him pretty closely in college. And I did too. And like in our work at UTH, primarily what I do is I'm on the premium side. And primarily what we do from like October through April is do deep dives on a couple of potential rookies, you know, people that we think are going to be type draft picks for the NFL, we start previewing them in like October. So we do deep dives on these guys. We go watch film. We study their metrics, like, you know, try and get some background biographical data on these guys. Like, it's not like I haven't watched James Washington. I actually watched him pretty extensively. I never said that he was slow. And actually, one of the more amazing parts about James Washington is he has like this gear that, like, when the ball's in the air, like, there's no one better at creating space. Like, even when you think he can't run any faster, like, he just creates this space. Like, he's phenomenal at the catch point, and he's good at contested catches. Like, but he's not, you know, he's not Marquise Goodwin, who's winning with creating a ton of space. He's a guy that can create a little bit of space and maximize every ounce of that space that he creates just by being fantastic with his hands. So, yeah, I love James Washington as a player. The question is for fantasy and dynasty, you know, what's sort of his upside? You know, he's going to be a number three in an offense. Like, that's really tough to negotiate from a weekly basis. It'd be highly unpredictable. But, you know, as sort of a long-term prospect, I like his chances of being viable for fantasy for a while. I just don't know. You know, I don't think that ultimately looks like a top 12 wide receiver in the NFL type deal.
And that's the – I was really big on him pre-draft. And then that landing spot was pretty much as bad as one you can find, because you have Antonio Brown, who looks like he's going to be an outlier and probably will play until his mid to late 30s. And then you have Juju, who's 21 years old, 22 years old yet. So, yeah, where is Washington going to get the targets, unfortunately? There are going to be blow-up weeks. He's probably going to be a best ball guy, but it's probably 4 years to 5 years before he'd even be the number two there, or he'll be on another contract. So you're going to have to be really patient with him if you want to hold on to him and maximize his upside. And from what I know of Dynasty and playing in Dynasties, we don't have a ton of patience.
No, we really don't. And like, he's a long-term patience play to me anyways. And, you know, you look at, you know, Antonio Brown to me is really tough, because I look at Antonio Brown and like, he's a generational player. No question. Like, he should be a Hall of Famer, like all of those things. But at the same time, if you look at how wide receivers age, typically the guys that play into their mid to late 30s are really high draft picks. And I think that there's a reason for that. One is they got an opportunity to play from a early age, right? They were really good athletes. Probably they were, you know, they figured to be in the conversation to be elite receivers early in their career. Larry Fitzgeralds, those types, like, those are the guys that play a long time. And I think that they can sustain injury too, right? Because if they have an injury or so in like their late 20s, like, there's still a bounce back opportunity for him. What concerns me about a guy like Brown is, like, what happens if he, you know, tears an Achilles or something like that? They're out on a contract. You know, the Steelers could get out and save money like in the next couple of years in terms of cutting him. Like, it's not a ton of cap savings, but like, if something were to happen to him, they could move on. And then what sort of happens to him? So I'm not saying that's a likely outcome, but he's going to be an interesting historical case study on sort of how he ages in terms of if there is an injury or any of those things. I'm not suggesting that will happen, but it'll be interesting to see, because he breaks the mold in terms of who plays into their late 30s.
Yeah, and he's a guy that I've pretty much penciled in as the next, obviously not the play style or size, but the next Larry Fitzgerald, the next guy that he's just going to keep producing. I never even thought about draft capital tied to that before. And, you know, Achilles, I mean, anyone blows that out, they're going to be in rough shape. The one thing, though, is if he does sustain an injury, Pittsburgh does have two wide receivers that you know, that can help make up for that. No one can be Antonio Brown, but between Juju and James Washington, you would really have two really good wide receivers, and you wouldn't have to go all out to bring Antonio back if you didn't want to. So, yeah.
It is a pretty good set of two guys to have there if he did. But we kind of jumped into that, but before we get on to the next part, we need to talk about our sponsor, gtbets.eu. They're the official sponsor for the Dynasty Trades HQ podcast. And are you looking to get in on some action in today's games? Head on over to gtbets.eu for all your sports betting needs, with the updated odds covering all major sports. GTBets.eu will have you placing your first bet within minutes with their simple-to-use registration process. So register now, earn up to $500 in free money. Simply add Trades HQ to the referred by field to get the highest possible welcome bonus. You know, we've been talking about them all off season, but now here we are in the real, almost into regular football. So get out there and join GT Bets and bet on some football. So
Jordan, though, real quick, because I suck at DFS, Lucky. it's horrendous. I keep trying. And every week I'm like, this is the lineup. And then, you know, I'll typically come in the bottom, I don't know, we'll say bottom fourth of whatever I'm playing in, whether it be GPP or just a straight up tournament or whatever.
Wow, you are bad.
No, I'm tired. I'm absolutely horrendous. So when your book comes out, am I going to be able to use that for DFS?
Yeah, I think you can look at the types of players that and sort of how players project and the types of players. And you can really look at a lot of the dynasty marketplace and sort of see where players hit from. That's a lot of what my book is, you know, what sort of the hit rates are. And one of the things that I break it down is weekly starters, you know, how many starter weeks you get from particular ranges of the draft, because I think it's a really important way to construct your roster, to think about that. Sort of like you said earlier, don't, you know, we sort of look at these paper champions and how much functionality does that really have? Well, if you sort of look at the data and sort of look later on, you know, some of the cheaper guys, how do they hit and sort of those type of scenarios? I think that type of thinking will be valuable for DFS.
Yeah, that's sorry.
Yeah. Don't die, because I don't know how to edit or any of this shit.
I know. I was about to say something, and then I started coughing. Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the things that we were going to talk about, and it kind of fits in with the things that you're
Trade alert, real quick. So, I don't know if anyone follows John Bosch on Twitter, but a lot of people follow John Bosch.
I was going to say, there's a lot of people that follow John.
So, unfortunately, we had our live auction draft tonight, and And I told him I had this taping tonight, so he already knew I was going to be completely distracted. Long story short, that team is screwed because it's a super flex, and I have $8 left and no quarterbacks.
And that auction started like an hour ago, right?
Yeah. But one of the things he told people on Twitter was to send me trash or just try to send me trash offers. And someone took him up on that. So I have a Dynasty Trade trash offer, and it's actually including a player that Jordan was just speaking about while we were all speaking about him. So I was offered Josh Adams and Mac Hollins for Jamal Williams and James Washington.
Wait, say that again. Josh Adams?
Yes, he's a seventh string running back for the Eagles.
Right, and who else?
Mac Hollins, the fourth string wide receiver.
For what?
James Washington and Jamal Williams.
So that was offered to you right now, live while we're doing the show.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was done in jest.
Oh, okay. That would make a little bit more sense.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's hoping like I'm drunk and or stupid enough to accept that, but I'm sure I didn't have any real hopes of that.
What's really great is Jordan just sitting there. He's not even commenting.
I'm just chuckling at the Mac Hollins love. That's all.
I liked Mac Hollins last year. And, you know, I'm an Eagles fan, so obviously I'm going to have some bias towards him. But I liked him because I saw him doing things that he wasn't necessarily touted for coming out of college. I saw him working underneath. I saw him more than just being a deep threat. But at best, he's the fourth option on this offense. So he's a guy that needs Alshon to go away, that needs Zach Ertz to go away, that needs Nelson Aguilar to go away, and Dallas Goedert not to perform for him to even get a whiff of production. So, yeah, Mac Hollins is a guy people like, but he's never really going to have the opportunity.
Well, before you did that trash dynasty trade, we were going to talk about a couple of the injuries that happened, and it kind of goes along with what you just said, especially over there at New England, where now Rex Burkhead got hurt. And every time another player gets hurt, they have to do who's next in line. So when you just said all those people that could have to get hurt in Philly for Mac Hollins to do anything, what do you think's going on over there in New England now that another running back got hurt?
Well, isn't Sony Michaels, Michelle, shouldn't he be back from his clean out? Wasn't it like he was only going to be out 10 days or something like that? So he should be back soon. They still have James White there. James White's one of those guys when I was talking about like winning during the season. James White's like one of those guys you keep at the bottom of your roster because there's going to be some week this year that you can start him when everybody else is injured in that backfield. And he'll end up having 5 receptions for 50 yards and maybe, you know, 10 carries for 50 yards and give you a good week. Hey, are you buying anyone in that backfield, Jordan?
I would say if I can buy Michelle at a discount. I mean, you look at, and again, one of the things I like to really do is to identify successful types of players and figure out ways to invest in those successful types of players. So one of the things that we know is that since 2008, there's been 20 running backs drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. 90% of them have hit for at least one top 24 season. The two misses were David Wilson, who got injured really early in his career after some promise, and Donald Brown, who just missed, right? He just didn't hit. So 90% of them hit. You know, so I think that Sony Michel's got a good chance of long-term success. And if I could invest in a, you know, hey, if I could flip James Washington for Sony Michel, like that's the type of trade that really increases your chances of sort of long-term success. Those are the types of acquisitions I would try and make on a guy like Sony Michel at this point. You know, if I had to take a deeper bet, I mean, the Burkett thing scares me. I've got him in a bunch of places. I own him a lot. They're not transparent with their injuries. We're never probably really going to know what's going on. It's just sort of rumors at this point. But that's obviously a concern. I mean, I don't know. I think I look at this thing and I think, you know, I think Jeremy Hill could be a difference maker. Like, it seems crazy to say that now, but, you know, you just look at the type of running back that's been successful for them. It's sort of that big guy that scores touchdowns, and that's sort of what he is. And with so much uncertainty, I like to take retreads that when they're high draft picks, they tend to stick around, and he sort of is an example of that. And they're not, like, we can say a lot of things about New England's running back usage. They're not stupid, you know, and they identify guys that are cheap and they sort of churn through them. Like, it's not necessarily predictable, but they're pretty good at evaluating these guys. So that's definitely a place that I'm looking. If he's on the waiver wire or something in a league, like I'm my ears are perking up, like as the days go by during this training camp on Jeremy Hill.
It is funny. Yeah. I'm in two leagues right now that have free agent auctions going on, and Jeremy Hill went up in both of them this morning. And one of them, somebody placed a huge bid on him this morning. It's funny too, with all this preseason stuff, there's these guys that'll flash and do something great, and then everybody talks about them. And especially with New England, last night you would think that Cordarrelle Patterson is Randy Moss now. Did you see all the Cordarrelle Patterson love that was all over Twitter last night?
I didn't see it, but it's not surprising.
Yeah. I mean, people are still holding out every ounce of hope for him. But just back to the running backs, it's funny, though. Tim Torch on Twitter today or yesterday, I don't know, because the timelines are all screwed up now.
Exactly.
but he also brought up Jeremy Hill, and he comped him to LeGarrette Blount. LeGarrette Blount went there, and for a couple seasons, he was, you know, the touchdown threat, and he had a role, and that is – looking like what Jeremy Hill is going to be able to do now, because what I saw on Burkhead, and again, I was on Twitter, so who knows how true it was, I saw tear, which that never sounds good. I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be one, but anytime you hear tear and knee, it's not a good thing. Michael's already got the knee issues. James White is, he's a replacement level player who does what he does, but they are going to need someone at that goal line, and that is going to be Jeremy Hill. He can run downhill, and he's not that old. He could be there for a couple years because his contract this year is nothing. So I'm sure if he's decent, they'll bring him back again. And Jeremy Hill is definitely probably going to be the number one waiver ad this week, which is just hilarious because a lot of us didn't even think he would break camp with them.
Well, one of the things, though, about, like, if you're – I think if you're building your team in the right way, that you should take a lot of bets on players like Jeremy Hill. And what I mean by that is, like, if you're building your team, the most efficient way you can really build your team is building with receiver early. Even now, like, everyone wants to go running back early. There's a ton of recency bias in the market, especially in startups, because people want the, you know, Alvin Kamara story from last year, you know, Gurley, you need a big running back to win. Well, still the best time to get receivers is early in a startup draft, and you can hit from running back from deep. And so if you're taking, one of the things that I really like to do and suggest to people, and a lot of this is based on the research that I did in this, in my book, as you go on later in a draft, the running backs are much more functional as you go, you know, deep in the draft. So if I'm in a 25 man roster that isn't like super flex, or I don't have premiums at tight ends, it's basically a stock PPR, I want like half my roster spots with running backs. And Jeremy Hill is the perfect type of bet because, you know what, if he doesn't make, you know, if you take him in the 20th round and he doesn't make it out of camp, you can cut him, right? You have no allegiance to him in terms of keeping him long term. Whereas if you're taking a receiver in that spot, your likelihood of hitting is low. You're going to have to probably hold them. You're taking like an Equanimeous St. Brown type that's a developmental guy, and their hit rates are really low. You know, day three receivers don't hit very often. And so you're making yourself, you're holding on to this roster spot that's unlikely to hit. Whereas if you get a guy like Jeremy Hill, if he doesn't make it out of camp, you cut him. But if he makes it out of the roster, he's got high functionality, right? Because, you know, he's probably in there. He's probably in a high scoring offense that's going to produce touchdowns. We've seen that out of their running backs. So that's the exact type of investment that you want to make, like at that range of the draft.
Yeah, I love the bottom of my rosters are just churned. And it's usually running backs and tight ends, because my wide receivers are the one, it's exactly like you said, the wide receivers that are left in that area. And even just looking at the waiver wires when I'm churning the roster, looking at the wide receivers, I can't see any path to most of the wide receivers on the waivers to becoming useful. Running backs, it's a lot easier. There's one, two guys ahead of them. Wide receivers, you gotta hope Antonio Brown goes down and hope that, you know, then Le'Veon Bell doesn't just get a bunch of receptions on that team. And then Juju could step in for him. It's just, it is a lot harder to find a wide receiver that's going to be useful to you on a 1 week basis. On the waivers and towards the end of the draft. That's why I was holding on and it didn't work out, but whatever, I cut him quickly. Last year I held on to Jaquizz Rodgers because he had a decent 4-week, 5-week run the season before. As soon as I saw he was trash and that they weren't going to use him, you cut him, like you said, and move on. And you're not holding that roster spot for exactly Equanimeous St. Brown, who is probably never, there's a 90% chance that he is going to be out of the league in 3 years.
Yeah, you know, I was on the Super Flexible podcast last night, and we were talking about some of those players, and what, especially with the way it's going on over there, you never know what running back you're going to have in your starting lineup in week 10, week 15, for your fantasy bowl even, you know? Guys that are on the waiver wire right now are going to end up being in your starting lineup. But I will say something. Shane, you always interrupt me saying, ooh, breaking news. We do have a breaking news right now in the real NFL because we're recording right now on a Friday night. There is preseason games going, but it is now all over Twitter and all over the internet that A.J. McCarron has just broke his collarbone in the game right now. So it says A.J. McCarron has suffered a broken collarbone in the game against the Browns tonight. So what do you guys think? Is Josh Allen going to start playing now, or what's going to happen over there?
I mean, it's either him or Peterman. Look, they, no matter what Twitter, the Twitter people think, Twitter fantasy thinks of Josh Allen, Buffalo likes him.
Yeah.
Clearly, they moved up to get him. They could have taken someone else, and they didn't. Josh Allen is a first-round quarterback. I mean, he could hit. It's a 50-50 coin shot. His receiver core with Corey Coleman looks a lot better than it did a week and a half ago. I mean, I've seen worse receiver cores than Corey Coleman, Kelvin Benjamin, and Zay Jones. They're not going to have much of a choice. He's going to get to play this year. The Bills are going to be bad. It's just, are they going to want to throw him out there week one, or are they going to wait until they're 0-7 to do so?
Yeah, well, it says here right now on RotoWorld, he broke his collarbone getting tackled by Myles Garrett. And it says the typically collarbone fractures are 10-week injury, so mm-hmm. they may just put him on IR and he's done.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason. Look, they weren't going to win this year anyway if AJ McCarron was starting or not. At best, they were a 5-11 team, maybe 6-10. At some point, AJ McCarron wasn't going to be starting anyway. It was just going to be, when did the coaches feel Josh Allen was ready to go out there and you know, not embarrass himself and he can run an offense. It looks like it might be week one for him. So everybody that grabbed him in the second round of a Superflex draft, because we all let him drop to the second round in Superflex drafts, are going to look a hell of a lot smarter because of this injury. And if he hits, I mean, that's a great pick for everyone. Like I said, second round of Superflex drafts, we let a quarterback, a top 15 quarterback, we let him slide there.
It is funny, Jeremy, who's not here right now, Jeremy and I, in one of our drafts, he picked right in front of me, and he took Josh Allen in that draft right before I was about to take him, and then him and I tried to work out a deal, but he wouldn't trade him to me, so.
Jordan, do you hate Josh Allen?
I've somehow become a Josh Allen enthusiast, which is astonishing, because I spent, like I said, us over at UTH have been doing player spotlights for rookies since October. And since October, I had been ragging on Josh Allen as a bad quarterback prospect. I think his metrics aren't good. I don't like his tape. But like you said, I'll do anything at the right cost, right? I mean, my house isn't for sale right now, but if someone comes and offers me four times what that's worth, I'm going to sell it, right? I'll do anything at the right price. And with Josh Allen, like, he's one of those players for me. In the league that we're in together, it's a start one league. Like, I got him at 410.
That's and great.
The players going in that range, like, you just, like, first round quarterbacks have since 2008 have hit 52% of the time for top 12 seasons. Now, that includes Deshaun Watson, Mahomes, and Trubisky, who none of them hit in year one. But I suspect that number is going to go up because I like their chances. And so you're just looking at a guy, like, even if you think that he's bad, like, even if you think he's half as good as the average quarterback in that range, which is, I mean, that's saying something, you would still put his odds at a lot higher than, you know, the Equanimeous St. Browns. Like, just compare their draft range in the NFL draft, compare their draft range. Receivers drafted in the sixth round of the NFL draft since 2008 have hit 4% of the time. 4% of them have hit for top 24 season. Compare that to quarterbacks drafted in the first round of the NFL draft, it's 52%. Like, that's a massive, you talk about being less wrong. Like, you should eliminate people like that from your draft calculus. Like, you just shouldn't load up on those type of guys. And you take a high bet on a guy like Josh Allen, and you're getting a huge discount because people don't think he's good. And that's the perfect time to be contrarian, when there's good indicators pointing to the fact that he has a chance greater than what the market says on being a good quarterback, even if I don't like him. So I'm on him, which is somewhat crazy. I never thought I would be in this position, but I'm like his biggest supporter at his cost.
Yeah, I've drafted him, and same thing in rookie drafts, where I'm looking at, I can't even think of the names anymore, but, you know, all the guys that we all fall in love with, like, oh, no, this guy's going to break out. He's going to be that fourth round stud. Because remember, someone broke out from the fourth round of the rookie draft 6 years ago, and that's what I hold on to. not the other, not the other 95% of the players. Like, you know, just look at your waiver wires someday, just for fun, and look at some of the names you see on there, and you're like, wait, he was going to be a big player though, like Trey McBride. I remember he was a sleeper for a lot of folks, me included. I bought into it earlier. Farrow Cooper, Thomas Dora Reddy, Rashad Green. Like, these are all players that honestly we shouldn't have drafted, like Jordan just said. And I like that Jordan keeps bringing up draft capital, because, you know, as much as complicated as we make this little game of ours, that is the biggest indicator. I've started to, and what I'm trying to do in my rookie drafts is basically get rid of all my second through fourth round picks for the most part.
Yep.
because those are the guys that went later in the real NFL draft, and they're probably not going to hit. And you know what? I'd rather not hit on the one guy 1 year and then hold on to that for the next decade. So I'd rather get rid of every one of those picks outside of the first round, to be quite honest with you. Unless it's a super flex, obviously, because it's deeper and you can get guys like Cortland Sutton and Calvin Ridley in the second round of those drafts.
Or if it's IDP, which you would never do anyways. But
Jordan, do you play IDP? Real quick, do you play IDP?
No, I don't.
Oh, God.
And you hate people that play it, right?
No, he doesn't hate
I don't hate people that play it, especially anyone that's interested in the analytics of Dynasty. I don't hate
Shane hates a lot of people.
You know what? I'm going to have to buy the book just to have a strategy session with Jordan, but not about fantasy, just telling myself better. Damn it, that was such a good diplomatic answer. I wouldn't think of that. I'd be like, yeah, they suck.
I think you can have a Jordan one-on-one without buying the book, maybe, right, Jordan?
No. You got to buy the book. I will say this.
Wait, where did Jordan
start up?
Oh, there you are.
You guys there? I lost you for a second.
Yeah, we lost you there for a second there.
No, I wouldn't. Here's the thing. I wouldn't expect Jordan to do a free session with me, because everyone in fantasy and everyone that does this and puts their work into it deserves to get paid for it the work into it.
I didn't mean for you to get
that's a plug for.
Yeah.
So make sure you join our Patreon page. Because we're not writing books over here, because frankly, I don't have the attention span for it. So it would be all over the place. But I can handle the patrons' emails and questions like that. But no, definitely, I'm probably going to buy the book. I only have about a week left to get the pre-order and get the one-on-one with Jordan, which will be weird. But, you know, that's all right. I'll do it.
It is funny, too, when you mentioned the Patreon. Last week's Patreon, you and I even got into it a little bit. And I left it in the Patreon version of the show so people can hear it. I totally forgot now what I was saying when you just interrupted me.
I don't know, but I got another trade alert. But this was a trade I actually made.
Yeah, Jordan, a lot of times any trade or trade, anything that we talk about, it always involves one of Shane's teams.
Well, I'm in 30-plus leagues, so I'm like my own small sample size. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a real live walking sample size. And Jordan, what we do on the show, in case you haven't listened, is I don't tell which side I am anymore, because then people automatically vote against me. We don't.
Yeah. It just happens to be that his side is always wrong. But go ahead.
Okay. So here's the trade. And I'll give you the team names because they're clever. Golden Showers gave up Allen Robinson. And 007 opening scene gave up Corey Grant, Geronimo Allison, Vance McDonald, and the biggest piece of the trade, DJ Moore.
It's really funny because those two names, this is the first time where I can't figure out which one you are just based on the name. But looking at all that stuff.
All that stuff.
Or like my friend Dynasty Greg says, a meaty sack. That's a pretty big sack for Allen Robinson. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Allen Robinson, but at this point right now, I mean, I love DJ Moore, but I guess in that deal, I would want the Allen Robinson side. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clearly Allen Robinson for me. I mean, you just look at the drop you're going to take from Allen Robinson to DJ Moore in terms of what their expected outcomes are, I think is a pretty good gap. And I don't think anyone in that makes up for it.
No.
And again, you don't want to be in the business of having these, you know, developmental wide receivers. And we can like Geronimo Allison fine as the wide receiver 3 in Green Bay, but what's his functionality in terms of week to week? Like, he's probably not going to see 100+ targets, which is what you're going to need for him to be fantasy viable. And I just have a hard time seeing how on a week-to-week basis you're going to predict him, and you're better off to want to start a running back in that type of calculus. So, yeah, I would be on Allen Robinson because I think it locks in with a lot more stability your wide receiver position. It gives you – I don't think you're adding anything to the downgrade from to DJ Moore.
I agree, and I've got my fingers crossed because I so hope Shane is the package size. What side are you real?
I took DJ Moore. I actually like I like DJ Moore than I like him more than I like Allen Robinson.
See, so Jordan, this is what always happens, whether we know it or not. Everybody always picks the opposite side of Shane.
Well, here's the other thing: you can generally tell which side of the trade, if whatever side of the trade is riskier. If like you're shooting for the upside, that's usually me.
I wish people could have saw the video.
So I figured out what you were looking at when you said there's a Devy trade next to it. That's a completely different trade, and it was a Devy trade.
Well, it only shows a link, and then all of a sudden it says Golden Shower, so I thought it was the same thing.
No. Two separate trades.
All right, so then what is the now that we've already destroyed you on that, what's the Devy trade?
That's fine. I hate you both. So this trade, mind you, it was made before the Rex Burkhead knee injury. Marlon Mack and Michael Gallup. For J.K. Dobbins, Rex Burkhead, and DeAndre Francois.
What were the two guys in the first part?
The Marlon Mack and Michael Gallup?
Oh.
Are you talking about the Devy players?
Yeah. No, I would I would like the Dobbins better than those other two guys. Jordan, what do you think?
Who were the – it was Francois, Dobbins, and who else? Burkhead?
Rex Burkhead, before he before the knee injury.
See, it's kind of hard to evaluate something when you're supposed to evaluate prior to the injury, but...
What can you do? Injuries happen.
Well, exactly. But, Jordan, what do you think?
Is it Superflex?
It is.
I was going to say, typically anything that Shane's talking about ends up being Superflex.
That's fair. Okay. I would probably lean the... I'm just not a big fan of Michael Gallup or Marlon Mack. Although I think you could probably get a little bit more market value for them than what the Francois Dobbins and Burkhead side is. I'd probably take the Burkhead side. We'll see what it is with the injury, but I'm just not a big fan of Mack and Gallup.
Yeah, that was my side of the trade. And it's funny because I was trying to get Burkhead everywhere I could the beginning of the week before he injured his knee. And I actually didn't even make this offer. So when it came over, I was like, yeah, no, I like this. I mean, I got a solid roster of pros that losing Mack and Gallup really isn't going to affect me. Although I did lose Geis on that team too, which does hurt a little bit, but what are you going to do? I'm just really disappointed that you didn't like my, DJ Moore trade.
It's just a gap for me in terms of, I'm just not as high on DJ Moore as I think than you are, I think, for me, and I'm pretty high on Allen Robinson. So it's just, I think, a preference deal for me. And I typically don't like the 4-for-1 getting the 4 type of trade just because I'm going to have to, right? I'm losing more than Allen Robinson, right? And even if I had 3 open spots, I'm giving up that whatever I could get on the waiver wire or any of those spots. Like I have to, it's 3 spots I'm giving up, even if there's not players attached to them. So that's just my concern with that trade.
No, I understand. Trust me. To at least 2 of those players, Vance McDonald and Corey Grant, probably won't be on my roster by the end of the season. Vance McDonald's all he's done his entire career has been a wish and a hope. And for whatever reason, he can't stay healthy or hold on to the football.
It is weird with all those offensive players they have over there in Pittsburgh. It's so hard to get a freaking tight end.
Well, where's the target volume? They had Heath Miller for all those years, and he played a role. He was a chain mover. He was a check down option. But especially now with those 3 wide receivers and Bell still there, it's just you're the 4th, 5th. I'm not good with math, but what's that, 3, 4? You're the 5th option on the offense. It's really hard to make a dent as the 5th option on the offense.
Well, I want to say something. When we talk about these trades and everything, we actually got a few trade questions from our email account and also on our Twitter account where people are asking about Geis. You know, Geis got injured and he's done for the year and all that stuff. But we still are getting all these different trade offers from people. And one of the offers we got was from Show Me the Facts. And his trade was Darius Geis or Tevin Coleman and Kenyon Drake?
Give me Geis.
Me too.
Yeah, I'd have to take Geis too.
So let me ask you, what do you guys think about Kenyon Drake? There's a lot of trade offers, including Shane sent me Kenyon Drake the other day for Corey Davis. I mean, what do you guys think of Kenyon Drake? I live down here in Miami, so.
Real quick, that's only because I knew you were a Kenyon Drake fan.
I'm not a Kenyon Drake fan.
I thought you were a Kenyon Drake fan.
No.
I got to listen to this show once in a while. Maybe I'm going to do it.
Jordan, it was really funny. He guested on a show a couple weeks ago, and then he told Jeremy and I didn't promote you guys because I couldn't remember you guys' names.
That was like 4 months ago.
Whatever. But yeah, no. Listen, being down here in Florida, I'm actually not a Kenyon Drake fan. That's why I asked you guys this question, because I see his name thrown around a lot out there.
I think a lot of people really don't know what to do with him. I think there's a lot of people that like his explosiveness. They like his pass catching ability, but he's never handled a full role. He didn't do it at Alabama. He hasn't really done it in Miami, except for that little stretch there when Damian Williams was injured after they traded Ajayi. I think a lot of people feel that way, that they just don't know what to do with him. You want to sell high on him, but no one else wants to pay premium for him because everyone's like, well, he could hit, he could miss. I just don't know. That's my sense that I get when I speak to people about him.
Yeah, it was Corey Davis for Kenyon Drake straight up?
No. He had a couple other pieces. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, but you also stuck two other names in there that were pretty much essentially nothing. So that pretty much was what the deal was, yes.
look, just because we have a Trash Dynasty trade segment that I created doesn't mean that I don't send them out. No. And I send them out proudly to people that are allegedly my friends.
Hey, listen, I didn't throw it in the Trash Dynasty trade off. I could have, but go ahead, Jordan. What do you think?
Yeah, I just worry about Drake sort of long term. I don't know how much of a difference maker he is, right? I mean, there's so many. If you can cash out on a guy like him, there's a lot of different ways to replace him, I think, with how many good running backs there are. So his profile doesn't point to a lot of success, right? They have Frank Gore. It's not like he's the only person in town. They've got Frank Gore. They drafted a guy that I like quite a bit in Kalen Ballage. And so it looks right now like he's the lead guy, but I don't. You know, again, being less wrong, like we go into it with a lot of certainty, but there's a lot of reasons why that he wouldn't be sort of the lead guy. And if he's running back 24, like that's nice, but that doesn't really move your win rate. If you can package him and get an upgrade to a sort of a more long-term stable player, that's exactly the type of trade you should be making over and over and over again. And when you do it, when you keep doing that, like after a year or 2 years, like your team's going to be loaded just by doing those type of trades repeatedly.
It is funny, too, when you mentioned about that be less wrong. I've been doing this for a long time, and it always seems to me there is more people than not that think that they're right no matter what. There's so many times where people just, like, convince themselves that what they're saying is going to definitely happen with those players, and you just can't be that way, you know? Shane, you were about to say something?
Well, I mean, that goes back to, like Jordan was saying earlier, is – we're way too confident in our abilities to assess players.
Exactly.
Which is why when you play in a lot of dynasty or redraft or best ball or whatever leagues that you play in, but if you play in a high number of them, you should have some variance in your rosters because look, even if your process is good, you're still going to miss on some players. And just that's what I was trying to do with this Kenyon Drake here is just cash out on them. Just like, you know, just exactly like Jordan's saying, you know, cash out on those guys that you should know probably aren't going to succeed instead of thinking, oh, okay, I found the unicorn. Like there's only so many unicorns out there. If you've bagged one, there's probably not that many more out there. So if you think you have another one or something that looks like a unicorn, sell it to the next guy and let him think it's the unicorn for, you know, a horse, which is actually usable.
It is funny that you sent that to me, though. Hey, another Darius Geis offer that we got was for a Superflex league. And Mr. Underscore Get Underscore Right asked us, Darius Geis or Duke Johnson – a 21st and Mason Rudolph.
2021st?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to take Geis.
Yeah, I'm also going to take Geis there.
That kind of leads to the question, like, what do you think, especially Jordan, you know, we talked about it last week, Shane, but with everybody, all right, Geis gets hurt, and he was going there in, you know, 102, 103 in most of these leagues. Are you agreeing with some of these people trying to get rid of him, or are you trying to get him, or what do you think just because of the injury?
No, I mean, I think if you can play the long game on people, especially when there's injuries, especially when there's guys like Mike Williams who have sort of bad first year starts for whatever reason, like elite guys, that's the type of bet you want to make a lot. And so when you get the opportunity to do it at a discount, you should do it. And, you know, I look at this trade and like, we can like the 2020 class is like good. We can like it a lot, but I mean, how much better is that 2020 class going to be than Geis? Like how much, like if, like we can like that class as much as we want, like the odds are that pick hits to be better than Geis is pretty low. And then you look at, you know, and it's 2 years out, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of variance that happens between now and then. And you are getting Duke Johnson, who I don't think is a difference maker, and Mason Rudolph, who players in that range, you know, day two quarterbacks have hit 21% of the time for a top 12 season. And I just, you know, you do sort of the math on that, and it seems like it's, you know, four quarters on a dollar type of trade. Give me Geis in that situation.
If I thought, you know, if that trade was a 2019 first, I'd think a little more about it. But even still, I mean, I don't know who you're getting. That, assuming, you should assume most of the draft picks you trade for are going to be 1-6 or lower. So I don't know that the player you'd be getting in that level would be better than Geis anyway. But just trade it. I don't like trading that far out to give up an asset like Geis. If somebody wants to trade, you know, if they want to take Josh Doxton off my hands for a 2021st, well, I'd probably make that trade, but not Geis. I never, exactly like Jordan just said, like, playing the long game against people. And it always baffles me. Like, we're in dynasty football. Like, the name itself implies that, you know, this is for the long haul. But we make so many decisions based off of just what happened right now. Geis tore his ACL, right? Not his Achilles. He didn't have any severe damage. An ACL nowadays is not a big deal. Yes, he's going to be out the season. But he'll be back. Probably before the season's over, he'll be training and we'll see video of him coming out. I never understand that. If a guy gets injured, unless it's a severe injury, I understand that. Like when Dante Foreman, who I didn't like anyway, but when he blew his Achilles out, if someone were to offer you a first for him at that point, you know, take that. But a player like Geis, I don't understand it. Why you would sell low on him. Yes, he had an injury, but he's going to be back next year.
What's the worst that he is next year? Like if we go out 9 months from now, he's probably what, a fourth round startup pick, right? Is he worse than that? Like he's a. That's just the type of range that you think he. Yeah. I think that he would fall in.
And because Dalvin Cook's a second round startup pick, and the guy played four NFL games.
Yeah, right. It is funny, especially when you mention about the. There is some players. We all talk about how some people really overvalue these rookies, but there are some rookies that have that value, you know? And a lot of people, like I mentioned last week, I have Geis in like 10 leagues or whatever. And I got a lot of weird offers from people that I just was not interested in. And there is one last one.
After he was injured?
After he was injured. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, and yeah. I'll admit this. I sent out offers to people because you have to, because some people accept them. So if you don't do it, you're not doing your due diligence. But I kind of feel like a creep. Like I even half apologized in some of them. Like, look, I have to do this. I'm sorry.
I like when you sent me that offer the other day, and I don't remember exactly what the offer was, but I said to you, I was like, hey, listen, I'm not going to do that. And you just texted me back, dick. You know, it's like whatever. But we did have one last Geis one, and this one I thought was very interesting because of the result that happened. But what they asked us was, it's in a half point PPR and a 12 team dynasty. Do you want Geis? Or the other side is Ronald Jones, John Ross, and a 2021st and second.
No, I want Geis. I mean, you're not buying low on Ross, and I don't even remember who the other guy was.
Ronald Jones from Tampa.
Ronald Jones isn't a guy that I'm particularly fond of. I don't know about Jordan.
Jordan?
No, I would take Geis in this. Again, I like the 2020 class, but again, I think that Geis's value is much higher than this. I mean, I just don't like Ronald Jones. Since 2008, there's been two running backs drafted with first round rookie ADP that have been less than 205 pounds and have averaged less than a catch per season in college, or catch per game in college. It's him and Ray Rice. And you can look at Ray Rice and say, okay, well, he had success. They were way different players. And if you looked at Ray Rice's college production, he had a season where he had almost two catches per game. He didn't catch the ball at all in his first couple of years because Brian Leonard, who was their other running back, who ended up being a second round, I mean, he's not a big name now, but he was a second round pick in the NFL draft. He was their pass catching guy. So they had sort of a committee. And you just look at Ronald Jones, like, how does he win in the NFL, right? And it's either at his size, he's got to be a dynamic athlete, which I have questions about, and he has to be a good pass catcher. That's how people in his weight range hit. And you just can't, like, I just don't feel good about either one of those things. So he's a clear avoid for me. I don't have him anywhere, and he's a clear avoid player for me just because I don't think that I think there's a lot of rumors going around that he's a knucklehead from what I've heard and what people that have interacted with him have told me. There's just some questions about him as a person, and I don't like to get into a ton of that, but it just sort of confirms what I see with him as a player. And it gives me a lot of pause. So yeah, I'm definitely in on Geis on this trade.
And the problem with Ronald Jones is he's built like a receiving back, except that he doesn't have any of the skills of a receiving back. And from camp, you know, camp notes, and I haven't seen him in the preseason, but just from what I've seen on Twitter, he looks like he has hands of stone. So yeah, I'm with you, Jordan. I don't know where it's going to happen. I mean, he'll get volume. Well, you know, volume's great, but it's
will he though? Like, will he?
I think
what's
he
his
will.
Volume look like?
Oh, well, though Peyton Barber's the starter right now, right?
Well, and the part of the reason I even brought it up with it being the last one we had was that poll ended today, and it's a 74% on the Ronald Jones side and 26% on the Geis side.
Really?
Yeah, really. It's very strange. You know, it's more that it's that meaty sack than the player, maybe.
Sometimes I feel like I should just draft players I don't like and I don't think are going to do well, but I know other people like, so I can trade the shit out of them for these halts, because that's insane.
I actually do that in some of these drafts when the players that I don't like are there. I grab something that some of these some of these players that people like that I don't, just so I can move them.
No, my God, I wouldn't do that. I don't want to get stuck with them, but that's just incredible to me, because I don't think they're – even in Ronald Jones' best case scenario, does anyone think he'll be as good as Geis? No. 70% of Geis?
Well, hey, 74% of the people like this, whether it's the picks or the player. And let me ask you something, though, because you just kind of blew past that. If you're in a draft and the guys that you really wanted were gone and then you were on the clock, you wouldn't take somebody that you know everybody else wants just so you could try to move them?
No, I've done that once or twice just to do it, and then I just ended up trading the player for not equal value, and I should have just traded back.
Well, but if you couldn't trade back, you would do it then.
Look, the clock is a certain amount of time for a reason. I'm just saying, look, if there's a 24-hour clock on it, people can start getting antsy.
That is different. A 24-hour clock is different, and I hate 24-hour clocks, by the way, but
So Jordan, you don't even think Ronald Jones will get the volume there though, huh?
I don't. I look at him and I say, how is he better than a guy like Ameer Abdullah? And you look at the Ameer Abdullah sort of profile, which was that he was basically a between the 20s running back, right? You get a guy who's significantly better pass catcher than him in Theo Riddick, and then they were using big guys to ineffectively run at the goal line, right? They just have struggled doing that, and he's sort of one of the reasons why. I mean, how does that player score any meaningful difference-making points? He just doesn't, right? I mean, I called Amir Abdullah captain empty yards. And that's because that's the type of usage that he gets. And to me, Ronald Jones really fits into that. I don't see how he scores fantasy points. I really don't. I have a hard time seeing him scoring touchdowns. I don't think he's big enough to – he's not like Chris Johnson athleticism where he can score from a distance out. I just don't see that player. And, you know, you look at the players that are top – like the top 20 – the average top 24 running back over the past 10 years, 215 pounds, right? That's, you know, the average top – 12 running back, 214.9 pounds. I mean, that is a – he's well below that. And you just sort of – like, there's a reason for that because those guys can score points in a lot of different ways, and Ronald Jones just, I don't think, can. And so that's a big-time concern to me.
No, I completely buy it. He's not a guy that I ever liked. I think I own him in maybe one league, and I think it's the Scott Fishbowl, which is – you know, you just draft, you draft contrarian in that draft anyway. But outside of that, I don't own him in any money leagues, that's for sure.
Yeah, for me, I'm at zero with that. Even being out in the NFL draft, I was out there, and when that pick happened, it was kind of like a dud for everybody that was there. Jordan, thank you so much for coming on the show and everything. One thing I wanted to say is, when your book comes out, when everything comes out, please come back and talk about it. We would love to get everybody out there to buy it and talk about it. And in the off season, it's something that could really help some people get things going.
Yeah, I'd love to come back. And, you know, you can get the pre-sale will be over. The strategy session offer expires on September 1st. So get out there and get it now, because once that's over, I'm not going to be doing that anymore. So you can get it now if you order before September 1st. $25, you get the strategy session. I'll give you some – there's a lot of things, like some of the things we talked about in here, just ways to optimize your roster that will give you a leg up and just keep giving you small edges. And if you keep taking those small edges, they turn into very profitable things over a dynasty – course of a dynasty team. And, you know, we'll get together. We'll talk about how to do some of those things and sort of get you some edges in season.
Yeah, and I mentioned this on Twitter earlier. I don't know if it was from my handle or the Dynasty HQ handle. I don't know. I run both of them. But, you know, I mentioned that Jordan's a sharp guy, and he really is. And really happy that he came on. The book is going to be awesome. I'm going to order it. Does the price go up after the presale?
The price will go up after the presale, yeah.
I'm going to go in and order it as well.
Yeah, the price will go up after the presale. So it's going to go up, and you won't get the strategy session. So if you get those locked in, and even if you don't want to use the strategy session now, we can do it in January, you know, when your startups are. We'll make it work. We'll figure it out. We'll get in touch via email. But, yeah, you can get it at analyticsofdynasty.com. There's some content over there that's some of the preview of some of the stuff that I'm putting in the book. I haven't put a lot out there, just cause I want to save it for people that buy the book. But there's just some previews of just some things that we see. And I think that we should appreciate in Dynasty, and at analyticsofdynasty.com, you can go ahead and pre-order there and we'll get in touch.
Yeah. You know what, Jordan, I'm going to order one for myself because I can never read enough Dynasty football or any fantasy football content, to be quite honest with you. And really good fantasy football content's even fucking better. And then I think I'm going to have to purchase one, or we're going to have to purchase one for an HQ listener and maybe figure out how we can give that away to them.
That's a good idea.
So they can get a strategy session too, but I'm thinking it's probably only going to be eligible, or the only folks that are going to be eligible for that are going to be patrons. That's what I'm thinking. So we're definitely going to be ordering two of the books from the HQ, one for me and one for the podcast itself. But definitely hit that up. Jordan is and not to toot his horns just because he's on, but he really is a smart dude. Listening to the UTH podcast, the premium ones, I was a subscriber for at least a year. I forget, time flies, because I try to support, you know, the industry. But some of my favorite podcasts were the ones with Jordan on them. Jordan's a really smart guy. I would definitely recommend getting that book.
Yeah, and I would wrap folks. it I would wrap it up and circle back to the very beginning of the show, Jordan. And if you guys are not following at McNamara Dynasty, you should go out there and follow him. Just that conversation we had about James Washington, if you look at the thread of that conversation, every single person that commented on it, Jordan responded to them. So, you know, he's a great follow. Get out there on Twitter and follow him. And he does interact with the people that ask him stuff. So, Jordan, thank you so much for coming on. It was great to have you.
Guys, thanks so much. It was a real honor.
Well, that was pretty awesome to have Jordan on there. So before we wrap everything up, Shane, you want to tell everybody about the Scouting Academy?
Well, of course I do. invest in yourself and get a degree in player evaluation and assessment from the Scouting Academy. They've educated NFL GMs, personnel directors, and dozens of NFL scouts. Enroll today and you'll watch the same game tape NFL coaches watch. You'll learn to look past the metrics with position-by-position analysis. This is a time-tested curriculum, a chance to learn from NFL execs and coaches with over 350 years of NFL experience and 14 Lombardi trophies between them. All here to teach you, scout like an NFL pro, and join the Scouting Academy. If you sign up today using the DFF link, you'll get an exclusive discount. You'll save $50 when you sign up at Dynasty through Dynasty Football Factory. Get and log on to Dynasty Football Factory. You hit that link there. You'll save $50 on their next class. Also, we published an interview with Dan Hatman, the director of scouting development. And if I got his title wrong, I apologize. We just published an interview with him the other day. I got to edit that. And so I got to dive into that. And it was a really good interview with Tony G. Cool. Go on our site, save yourself $50. I would definitely recommend going and learning how to be a scout. And if you're going to do that, the Scouting Academy is the best place to do it. And if you want to save money, well, use our link. That's what I'm talking about.
I want to do a little teeny screen capture of part of the show sheet where it's spelled out curriculum for you. That's hilarious.
It's funny because it's not even phonetic. It's like, I don't even know what you would call this. It's like how you would teach a third grader to read, right?
Well, like, and it's funny too, because when you get to the word, you slow down. It's awesome. You know,
can I tell you something? I'm one of my 40 years old, right? Just about 40. I couldn't say variety. I couldn't say variety until I was like 30. I don't know why. I couldn't. Like, it would, this is how I can't even, I don't even think I could say it the way I used to say it. I would say like variety. Like, it would just come out like, you'd be like, you know how to read, right? Like, people would look at me like, are you illiterate? And I'm like, I'm not.
Well, the last, I don't know how to follow that. The last thing that we did have to mention was the FFPC. And before you go ahead with the little promo about it, I did want to mention to everybody that we will be out there for the FFPC on September 6th. And the website is going to be sponsoring some stuff on that Thursday and on that Saturday. And Shane and I are going to be doing the show live from the FFPC, and we're going to have some of the other hosts from some of the other shows.
I gotta be honest with you, though. Anyone that's going to stop by our table, it's going to be to see Jessenia probably and not us.
You know what's really funny? Yeah, people are going to come to see Jessenia, but I also think people are going to come to see us too. So don't say that. So what's
I think people might come up to me and punch me in the face.
Well, first of all, we're also going to do a show from my hotel room there, so that you'll be safe in the hotel room.
What kind of show?
Okay, so what's the FFPC read you have there, Shane?
Oh, well, that was really smooth how you went into that.
Well, I don't want to talk about what we're going to do, so go ahead.
So I got to read every promo, apparently. Hold on. When you scroll up, you know, again, you can tape these.
Yeah, but it's more fun doing it live and you screwing it all up. It is so much more fun. Shut up.
All right. The fastest growing Dynasty Football website, that's us, Dynasty Football Factory, has joined forces with the biggest high-stakes fantasy football platform on the planet, the FFPC. DFF is proud to offer these exciting and new Dynasty high-stake leagues in an exclusive partnership with the FFPC. Leagues start at just $77, but the sky is the limit. Take your game to the next level. Think you have what it takes? Then raise the stakes. Go to DynastyFootballFactory.com and click on the FFPC logo to sign up today. And I'm actually in three FFPC leagues. I got two dynasties, one regular, one super flex, and then I'm in the Football Guys Championship, $350.
Cool. I wish we were doing one of those really high stakes one live in Vegas. That I think that would have been fun.
I gotta be honest with you. I think there's a pretty good chance that I'll be depositing when I'm out there and watching everyone else draft that I'll end up signing up for one for next year.
Cool. Let's do it together. I think that would be fun.
I make all the decisions?
So there's one other thing to say about Vegas too. We are going to actually do Facebook live streaming of us out there in Vegas. So for those of you
who,
yes, we are from the DynastyFootballFactory.com Facebook page. So, you know, follow that Facebook page and you will see Shane and I and some of the other people. And like Shane says, you may only want to just see Jacinia, but we will be broadcasting live on Facebook while we're there at the convention. So check that out and listen for our shows. And if you'd like, please follow us on Twitter at Dynasty Trades HQ. And if you have any questions, anything you want to know, send us an email at DynastyTradesHQPod@gmail.com. And please, like we said at the beginning of the show, if you're interested, join our Patreon account. I know, Shane, you were plugging that right at the beginning of the show this week. And this week, when we're done with this, we're going to be also doing some exclusive content for the Patreons with Jordan. So if you'd like to hear that, check that out. And give us a rate and review on iTunes. And we will talk to you next week.
Yeah, whatever.
God, bye.